Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respect to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to the COVID-19 special of The Gays Are Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Show your love by following us on Instagram or Twitter, or join our Facebook group at The Gays Are Revolting.
Support our show and listen to bonus after shows by becoming a patron at patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod.
Hey everybody.
Hey.
Welcome to the
COVID-19 medical special.
So today on the show we have Dr. George coming on to have a chat about coronavirus.
Yeah.
With us all, COVID-19. And,
yeah, as well as Anthony Spinner, the venue manager of DT's Hotel, which is obviously one of the oldest gay bars in Melbourne.
Yes.
Just to talk about how it's affecting queer venues and what they're putting in place to lower that curve and all that sort of stuff. But how are you guys going? We're releasing this episode early because...
Yes.
We just sort of thought there's a lot of information. There's a lot of misinformation out there,
yeah,
and a lot of good information that should be shared.
That's it.
How's it affected you guys?
Honestly, like up until sort of this morning, I was sort of just like, oh, yeah, like it'll be okay, whatever. And then I woke up this morning feeling very, very anxious.
Mm.
And I was
and
just
sick.
Like, so sick. No, I was just feeling very anxious. And then even on the tram this morning, my tram is generally packed with people, and there was maybe 10 on the entire tram. Yeah.
And look, you work in an industry, you're a hairdresser, you work in an industry where you are touching people.
Like I'm face to face with people every day. And
how's it affecting work?
We're generally booked up with colour appointments and haircuts and blow dries and stuff. Without a doubt, every single morning we have a bunch of messages on the answering machine, or we have people calling in, cancelling all their appointments, which I completely understand why they are. But it makes it a very scary time being someone in the beauty and hair industry.
Yeah.
Like we're going to be closing soon. Like without a doubt, like we will close sort of within the next week or two because there's no one coming in.
Yeah. So I'm very much the same, mate. I've got day job and night job. So my day job is working for a large arts organization, which decided to close the venue for 4 weeks, which I think was a really very good decision by our CEO and a very proactive decision. So we are closed. We've closed the doors for 4 weeks. This has never happened in the 34 years that we've been existing. The customers have been so understanding and so patient and wonderful, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But there's just so many logistics to closing, you know, a venue that has tens of thousands of seats sold
in
because we're going into comedy festival and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then my night job, which is performing, we were supposed to be performing, you know, 2 weeks in a 200 seat venue for comedy festival, and that's just been cancelled.
Yeah.
So we've just not only lost the income from that, but it also means that we've lost all of the money that we spent on advertising, Facebook ads. We've got 4,000 or 5,000 flyers and posters for a show that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and you were saying before we started, Luke, it's been crazy at your work as well.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of changes. We have a lot of our psychs working from home now, and it means an entire sort of rejig of how our business works because people still need their appointments. And I'm glad we've got some people in to chat about the logistics of it all, because it's really easy to get misinformation or just kind of lean into the anxiety of it all as well. It's really natural to get carried away and
it is actually it is easy to be carried away, but it's also easy to be complacent. And there's some messages out there that are unhelpful and unnecessary, but there's also some really important stuff that I think some people are not listening to as well, which is important. Yeah, I'm fascinated by the mental health side of it because I think this is going to have huge carry-on effects, and I'm grateful that you're going to be here for the next few weeks to talk about what's happening in that sphere.
Yeah, like even personally, I know myself and a lot of my frog friends have like avoidant personality tendencies. And so things like maintaining an active engagement with therapy is something we don't necessarily want to do. We know we have to do it. And I know even just being on the phones today, sometimes a pandemic like this gives our avoidant personality an opportunity to not take care of it.
Yeah.
You know, if someone rang me right now, like I did have to do to clients today and say, well, your psych is working from home, so you can do an online consultation or you can cancel it. I'll be like, cancel it. I'll take a break. And that's not necessarily the best thing for me. So it's going to be an important piece of this conversation is not only the physical logistics of how to stay safe, but also how to spiritually...
It's important though. It's really important.
You know, you give me an opportunity, I'd skip it off. I'd just go have a wet one instead. Easy, any day of the week. But I'm trying to be really mindful of still keep your appointments. Still stay engaged in the therapeutic process. You know, even if there is the slightest of road bumps in between you and getting that help. So we'll see. The good thing is Pokemon Go. I've been telling you, I was at the bar. Someone's going to get mad at me for this story. I was at the bar the other day talking to all of the guys. You know, they're going to be working from home. And I was like, just get Pokemon. And because Nintendo's changing the coding of it now that the Pokemon will pop up more frequently in isolated areas, the whole point of the game is to go outside and walk through crowds of people.
That's it.
And they've changed the whole
format.
This is fascinating. I am sort of loving, you know, like there's a lot, we're being given a lot of information at this period in time. Some of it's quite overwhelming, but seeing these sort of side stories like Pokemon Go,
it's not a side story to me, mate.
This is a main event. Did you guys see the monkeys in Thailand?
Oh my god, the monkeys in Thailand.
It's Jesus like it's a thing Christ. That you would never think of.
No.
But for anyone that hasn't seen it, in Thailand obviously there's a lot of monkies that are fed by tourists, and so these in the entire ecosystems of monkeys, of like... their food supply relies on tourists giving them food. That the tourists aren't there anymore. So these hordes of monkeys have started, you know, ransacking and attacking people, and they're moving in like groups of thousands, in gangs of thousands through the streets and the video footage. Even the canals apparently in Venice have suddenly started running clear.
Really?
Because there's no boats and stuff running through it. There's no pollution and stuff. All the cruise ships are stopping and that sort of thing. And the canals have started clearing up. There's really weird stuff. The air quality
in China
has been
completely cleared pretty much.
The best it's been in decades.
Besides where like they create steel because those, like for them to shut down, it is too expensive. It's more sort of
create steel still exists.
Yeah, but like create a pure form of it and like make it into things.
This is not a science podcast, but those science
stories. It ain't a scientist. It ain't up to you to create steel. You ain't Jesus.
Maybe I am.
He's my Jesus.
Who told me the thing? Was it on the show where we talked about the planes that just fly with no one on them?
I didn't think it was on the show, but yes, so this is a thing that's happening in cities like New York. Really popular.
Was it LAX or stuff?
LA.
They have to keep running the planes or they lose their
time slots.
They just run the plane.
Empty planes. So they can keep the time slot from when this pandemic
happens. One of the biggest domestic airlines in the UK completely shut down because they can't run their airlines anymore. So all those little towns that they used to fly to don't have any airport access whatsoever anymore, which is... Yeah.
Some insane stuff happening, and that's why we have decided that we are going to release this episode early. We're going to be talking about how this pandemic is affecting our community, and as you said, we've got Dr. George and also Anthony Spinner from DT. So should we get started?
Yeah, let's get on into it.
Since the coronavirus first emerged from China at the end of 2019, it spread to more than 100 countries and infected thousands of people. On March 11th, the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus, or COVID-19, as an international pandemic.
Given the constantly evolving nature of the pandemic, we're recording this interview on Monday night and we'll be releasing it on Tuesday, the 17th of March.
And to walk us through some of the issues tonight, we're joined by returning guest, Dr. George Forgan-Smith. Thank you for coming in, Dr. George. I guess the question we're all thinking is, what's life been like as a GP since, you know, she turned up?
She.
How is
Madam.
She, though?
It actually has been crazy, but it's kind of like the whole toilet paper shopping thing. And my partner said to me, 4 weeks ago, stock up, stock up, stock up. And I was like, yeah, I'll kind of get around to that. Yeah. Then shit started hitting the fan with the state health drama that happened. It was about a week ago where the doctor in Toorak had been diagnosed. Yeah. And the GPs got distracted. We were all angry at the health minister and we were kind of hoping for an apology. But that kind of distracted us away from the game where we should have been setting up and getting everything ready. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm in the process of setting up processes, so I am going to try and eliminate as many people needing to come to my office as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm doing that purposely because I don't want well people in my office. Mm-hmm. If you don't need face-to-face with me, I will talk with you over the phone.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And the government's made that possible. Yeah. But yeah. I think now's the time to be innovative, and we also have to keep on supplying good quality information. So I'm very grateful for you guys to invite me because it will help counter some of the bullshit that is going around.
Yeah. And there is so much of that bullshit going around.
There's a lot of shit words in this discussion about toilet paper.
I think we all have several aunties that have shared some memes are very questionable in their
truth.
There
are some odd ones, it's true. Mm.
Now, last week, more than 100 queer supportive organisations in the US released an open letter to healthcare providers, urging them to be aware that LGBTQ people may be at greater risk for the coronavirus than the general public. They firstly mentioned queer smokers. Why are me and all the other queer smokers more at risk?
Well, we know that people with respiratory disease, people with heart disease, people with diabetes and other chronic illnesses are at higher risk of developing more severe infection when it comes to COVID-19. So maybe it's to do with, you know, the inflammatory markers that are happening with smoking.
Yeah.
Look, we're playing this by ear. We really don't know a huge amount of this. So
erring on the side of caution, looking at the facts that have been presented so far.
I think that we can see that. Like, if you look at China, that is a very large population of smokers as well. And maybe that their lungs were a little bit more worn out or a bit tired or a bit more susceptible because of the inflammatory change that happens with cigarette smoking. Mm-hmm. And I imagine vape smoking as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm a full-time smoker. I'm like, at the moment, a pack a day. Mm-hmm. And so I saw my GP, I think, last week because I just wanted to get an all clear to continue working or whatever. And he sort of said, with the amount of smoking that I do and drinking and frogatry, that, you know, it looks like that's my general state of sort of flinging my system.
And you already have a bit of a cough and a bit of a...
And whatever. Does it sort of make it, in terms of without one of the COVID testing kits or whatever, harder to...
Who the hell knows? Mm. And see, this is the thing. Something that's probably important that we note is that cigarette smoke stops the sweeping ability of the lungs. Mm-hmm. So there's little cells that clear out the lungs, and when you smoke a cigarette, it switches them off. So when you cease smoking or stop smoking, they start to work usually about 2 or 3 days after you've had your last cigarette. And then a lot of people say, oh, I was coughing up so much stuff. And that's because they started to work. So I wonder whether people are inhaling little particles of the virus and they're able to sit there longer without being swept away. So that could be one of the things.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah, right.
Following on from that, a lot of people sort of in our community are at higher rates of having HIV. Do people living with HIV have to take extra precautions against the coronavirus?
I think all people should take precautions against the coronavirus, and that's hand washing, social distancing, and isolation if you're at risk. People living with HIV with a good CD4 count are not considered to be at higher risk.
Okay, cool.
However, if you have heart disease, if you have diabetes, if you have lung disease and HIV, I would be super cautious.
Mm. Okay, yeah.
Is it right to say, just, and this is more of a broader discussion about being undetectable as someone living with HIV, if you are undetectable as someone living with HIV, it means that you aren't really more susceptible to any sorts of viruses or anything than anyone that was HIV negative?
Well, I think undetectable is just an indication that the medicine's working and that HIV is no longer replicating in the body in a way that it can be detected. More important in sort of these situations is the CD4 count. And what we know is that as long as the virus isn't grumbling along at a high level, then the CD4, which are protective cells in the body, they are protected. They're not being killed off.
Sure.
So I think that's probably, in this sort of situation, equally as important.
Yeah.
But also remember that having a detectable viral load probably means that there's an inflammatory process happening in the body.
Yeah.
And so we want to reduce as much inflammatory stuff as we can.
And is there a correlation between undetectable and the CD4 count? Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. People with undetectable viral load, we would hope that without the replication of HIV, the CD4 cells will no longer be killed.
Yeah.
So we can expect that it slowly comes back up. And it can take months and it can take years. And for some people, their CD4 count never does come up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this is why early detection of HIV is very, very important.
Sure, yeah.
But that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, sorry, that is a very separate question.
So just bottom line, if you're living with HIV, have a non-detectable viral load, are taking your meds, and you've got a good CD4 count, you are not at higher risk.
Okay.
For contracting COVID-19.
Okay.
Mm. I'm always reading stuff on the internet, and I'm a bit of a Nancy Drew, but I've seen a lot of weird correlations between PrEP, the company that helped develop PrEP as well, and, you know, the first one I saw was saying that PrEP actually increases your immunity to contracting COVID-19. And then later I read that that company was now helping develop, you know, a treatment for the story keeps changing. Do you want to go Mythbusters on us for a little bit, George?
Just let's get the facts out fast. Truvada or tenofovir and sotrovimab does not treat COVID-19. It doesn't protect against it either.
Mm.
There was some belief that around HIV drugs, and there is some research as in people scrambling together and trying lots of different things in China and in other countries, that there are some HIV drugs that may be useful, but the way that PrEP, PEP, and Truvada works, it doesn't seem to affect the COVID-19.
Right.
They're very different viruses.
I was really looking forward to a world where it was just the gays.
No.
Everyone else is gone and it's just us.
Look, I suppose the other thing is, and we need to be aware of this, is one of the reasons that gays or GLBTIPQ people is that we tend to congregate in groups as well. And so,
we also have very small, close-knit groups. Yeah.
Exactly. So if one person is infected, and look, we know that people are capable of infecting other people 50% of the time when they have no symptoms at all.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. That's why we're hearing about people like Tom Hanks. That's why we're hearing about all of these Americans coming into Australia who are able to spread the virus and they don't get unwell until 5, 6, 7 days later.
Yeah, I can say from experience, I didn't see much social distancing at Closet on the weekend.
It's funny you say that, though, Luke, because Sunday last week, you and I were at Queer Deluxe. Obviously, people were talking about it then, but it wasn't. So this is Sunday, a week and a half ago at this point in time. It wasn't as big a thing, but in the few days afterwards, they sort of really talked about social distancing on the news and that sort of thing. I was like, fuck, we were like going around hugging everyone and kissing everyone and sharing drinks and all that like, sort of stuff, you know?
So we went to Queer Deluxe on Sunday. Thursday was at Honcho.
Yeah.
Still saw full open mouth kissing. Yeah. And I even said to my friend, I was like, you've just kissed 6 frogs in a row. You don't even know them. The only difference I could notice was that the numbers were less in terms of the general gathering. But even Closet on Sunday, you'll still want to take your shirt off and rub up against something. Mm. Like, that was still happening in full force on Sunday. And I got read for it on Instagram.
Yeah,
right. Because I don't do nothing without sharing it on my on my Instagram.
God bless you.
I'm that type of guy. And I got read for filth the next day from people being like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because I was on the dance floor, I was dancing around.
I don't think... Like, it's really, really important that we don't start a shaming thing because you might remember a little virus called HIV, right?
Yeah.
We didn't even know. Like, I got sent a really interesting PDF on how to have sex in a plague, and they didn't even know that it was HIV causing AIDS.
Mm, yeah.
We thought it was CMV. We thought it was, you know, and there's a few correlations with this, with the exception that people get sick faster and everybody's getting sick.
Mm,
this is not an I think it's equal opportunity.
Yeah. It's not about shaming people, but I mean, what I'm sort of talking about in the night that we had at Queer Deluxe, we were doing our usual greeting with all of our friends of, you know, a kiss on the lips and a hug.
I wasn't saying you were shaming. I am saying is that we need to kind of get past that, and we need to help educate people in a way that's positive.
Yeah, but it's also about self-training yourself just to greet. You know, absolutely. Gays are very affectionate people, and we often will kiss our friends and hug our friends when we say hello.
Did you see the video of Prince Charles trying to not shake hands with people?
His entire job is shaking hands with people. So there's this adorable video. Prince Charles at a film premiere. It's on the red carpet. There's thousands of people standing around. He gets out of the limousine and this guy goes to... So the royal family have adopted the hands together and bow off the head.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah.
And he gets out of the car, goes to shake someone's hand and goes, oh, sorry, and then bows and then goes up to a queue of people and just keeps doing it every time he talks to someone new.
I think it's a bit of a weird... Like, why would they do this kind of weird namaste kind of thing? Apparently
it's a bit of a thing in the UK. Is it? That's become sort of the trend. We're doing elbows, and I believe they're doing sort of the bound.
We should be doing knees.
We should be doing fucking nothing. Nothing. If you can touch knees, you're too damn close together. 1.5 to 2 metres. That's how far away we should be.
Well, speaking of contact on the scene, I heard that Wet on Wellington was one of the first saunas to adopt temperature testing people as they come in. Is that overreacting? Is that a good idea? Is it actually going to show you whether or not someone's at risk?
I made a video last week prompted by this because there was a sauna in Sydney that was doing the same thing. It's not enough. Because 50% of the cases are being transmitted before a person has symptoms, and the symptoms are a fever. 80% of people will get a fever, but that's too late. And it's a false sense of security, and if people are using that as an advertising mechanism to say you are welcome to come in and you will be okay, you won't be. And that's not good community service.
Do you think it's them trying to do the best they can, knowing that during the last epidemic that our community saw, they were very much the epicenter of the AIDS, the early days of the AIDS crisis?
Do you think
it's them sort of going, look, we'll just do what we can?
Look, people are doing everything they can, and I'm not running these people down for doing it.
Yeah.
Like, they're doing something that's useful. I want to know what happens if you do have a fever. Do you get redirected to a fever clinic?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I made the decision that I'm not going to go to a sauna because it's too many people, too close together.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, like, if you do like serial hookups on Grindr, that's one person at a time, right? But if you do a great afternoon a Sunday afternoon, a successful afternoon. Yeah. No. Well, it doesn't have to be successful. You only have to be in close contact for 15 minutes. You only have to be in the same room for 2 hours. That's all. A good 20 minutes to half an hour in the steam room, wacko. Everybody in there has got an equal spin of the roulette wheel.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound alarming, and I don't mean to be that guy, but we do kind of need to be serious about this. And I personally think that it's near impossible to maintain social distancing at a sauna.
Yeah.
And I'm not bagging anybody. I heard one of the other sex on premise venues in Melbourne has since closed their doors.
Right. Okay.
I don't know what's happening to the other ones. I can certainly name one sauna that never has enough soap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah.
Soap. Any soap would be great, but often I would go to the shower there and there's never any damn soap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we look at each other and go, why is there Shigella everywhere? It's because we're not washing our damn hands because we can't. So more soap, now, people.
Just to go back to people sort of seeking treatment in the community, another factor I'm assuming is a lot of queer people continue to experience discrimination and a bit of a lack of understanding from healthcare providers in many settings, you know, more so probably in rural areas than in city areas.
Mm.
How do you suggest this is overcome if a queer person is sort of debating whether to seek help?
Well, I think in places like Melbourne, we have a wonderful opportunity. Yeah. You've got many gay-friendly doctors. And, you know, I always say, you know, ask a friend, ask who they go and see. That's a great place to start. We know that there are gay-friendly clinics there. On the south of the Yarra, we've got PMC. We've got the Centre Clinic. This side of town, we've got Northside Clinic. I'm in the city. There's a lot of very good gay-friendly people. So it's not hard to find them.
It's a bit of research, yeah.
And failing that, you can always call your local HIV clinic or something like that, and they'll be able to tell you which places are friendly or not.
Sure.
But to be honest, I'm not sure whether certainly from the GP's perspective of what we're looking at now, sexuality really isn't one of the things that we're... I'm more concerned about, have you travelled?
And yeah. Where have you travelled? Yeah. I guess it's more about just some people generally feel... you know, a lot of trans people have an issue with going to a GP because there's certain questions that are being asked.
Yep.
Do you feel generally, for people that say are in smaller towns that still have a hospital, I know a lot of hospitals have set up COVID-19 screening areas and that sort of thing. Do you feel like the stigma at hospitals is a lot lower than independent GPs, and maybe that they would be better going to one of those testing centres if they do have access to a hospital?
If you think that you have COVID-19, you're feeling crook and you have a fever, you shouldn't be going to your GP anyway.
Okay.
You should be going to a COVID testing centre. To be honest, those people are working their asses off. They don't care whether you have sex with watermelons or, you know, whatever falls from the sky. They don't care. They care that you're unwell and we need to work out what is going on. I think at this point we're all working and scrambling and worried and concerned who you have sex with or what your particular gender presentation is. For me currently, it's not quite as important as a few other things that we need to sort out before that. A lot of my GP heroes and infectious disease heroes are heterosexual men. A lot of them are women who, you know, have kids and families and stuff, and they're doing really amazing stuff. So please don't, you don't have to see a gay man to get great quality care. You just have to find somebody that is caring and respectful.
And now, Dr. George, given that we've just sort of seen numerous large gatherings take place over the course of Mardi Gras,
midsummer and
midsummer
gay times and chill out and everything,
okay, well, midsummer, that's more than 14 days ago. Mardi Gras, more than 14 days ago.
Okay.
We'd just passed 14 days really? Now. So if you were...
Oh, wow.
If you got exposed to COVID-19 at Mardi Gras, you should know about it by now.
Okay,
we expect people to have symptoms by about 5 to 7 days, but 14, that's why the isolation is 14 days. Because if you're going to have symptoms, you'll show it within 14 days. And let's face it, people coming in from everywhere, lots of Americans. Americans... I'm sorry, guys, but you're the new... You know how everybody was up against the Chinese?
Yeah.
Well, I was actually going to ask you about
this.
Yeah.
I had an American lady come up to me on the Brisbane Mall last night, and I stepped back so fast. And she kept on moving towards me, and I said, look, I just need you to stand over there. I'm a frontline worker, and I have to keep on working. No offense, but...
Can you explain a little bit why... You think America... I mean, I sort of have a bit of an idea, but can you just explain why you think America is going to be a bit of a problem?
It's a problem because they delayed testing significantly. And there has to be a huge pool of it within America. And the reason I'm saying that is because we have all of these people coming from America who are infected.
Well, even before Trump was talking about it, we had people in Australia testing positive who had travelled to America. So it must have been a huge issue before
and
they even admitted it was.
Unfortunately, it was led from the top with people saying, well, this is a hoax. Trump himself said it was a hoax.
That's
developed by the thing. Now, I'm not turning this into a political show, but...
We've done that.
But that put people at risk.
And
people are complacent, and it's only now. And that's what happened in Italy, is that people were complacent. There's a video going around today that talked about people making videos to themselves 10 days ago. And they're saying, oh, a lot changed in 10 days. Like, seriously, my practice of work has changed significantly just even over the weekend. I made the decision that all my prep patients, I want them to do all of their kit themselves now. If they're well and they're healthy, then I will send them out a kit so they can do it. You know, it's for their greater good that they don't come in and get sick.
You mentioned earlier about how the government's made it possible for you to help people at home rather than having to come into the surgery. Can you expand a little bit more on that?
Yeah. So what the government has done is that they've finally allowed GPs to do telehealth, which means that we can do a telephone call, we can do a Skype call and talk to people. And be remunerated, right?
Okay.
Now, who is eligible for this? This is today is Monday, the what day is it? 16th. Who knows what it'll be tomorrow? But if a person is currently isolated with COVID-19, I can talk to them over the phone and I will get a payment from the government. If a person is in a high risk group, so that's somebody with heart disease, somebody with lung disease. I did recently say that if you're HIV positive and you have a good CD4 count, you're not in a high-risk group, but I think for the purposes of Medicare, I would consider that person a potentially high risk because I don't know what their most recent CD4 would be. And that's what I'd be telling the government if they came to knock on my door. But if you've had a potential exposure and you're in, if you're in isolation, we can talk over the phone. Now, here's the other side of the coin. I fully expect that I will get infected. I will probably get infected because of the work that I do and because that 50% of the people are sharing the virus and they don't have symptoms. So I'm not aware of what's going on. So it means that if your doctor becomes infected, they can be isolated at home and still do work over the phone.
That's a really good point, actually.
And we have a lot of doctors who are living with cancer. A beautiful doctor that I work with has just gone through that journey. I think it's important for her to be able to say, well, I'm not coming into work. I'm not putting my life at risk, but I am able to offer really good quality care at the best that I can. So a lot of doctors are putting together logistics to enable that to happen.
I think it's important too that these telehealth Medicare items also apply to psychological services. Because we've talked a lot at the practice about how oftentimes the your physical health takes a sort of precedent over your mental health. And we were talking at the pub about how people still view their mental health as a sort of luxury item that you can sort of in a panic go like, well, I need to deal with my physical health. And we had a rash of cancellations today and had to explain to people, no, you can still have your session via a telehealth service. And it's the exact same eligibility if you're diagnosed, if you're in self-isolation via advice from an allied health professional, or if you're in a high-risk group. So I think it's like over 70 years old. Torres Strait or Aboriginal is 50.
Lung, diabetes, chronic disease.
Yeah, pregnant or the the other one was if you have a child under 12 months as well.
Okay. Well, that's a good one.
That's also enables you to claim Medicare rebates or rebates on your medical services because I think it's seen as such a physical thing, but in my view, I think in a few months' time, we're going to really start seeing the mental impact
that a pandemic
has. It's already happening. As I walked out of the house today, I looked at my hands and I realized that I'm already scratching at one particular part of my hand. And that's probably partially because I'm washing my hands more often.
Yeah.
But it's also because I'm anxious as well.
Do you envisage going forth, after this COVID-19 epidemic, do you envisage and do you hope that perhaps this is something that can hang around where you can continue to see patients in this way?
I would love to because I think we have to kind of move forward. And I think telehealth is much more convenient for people. For me, it's fantastic. Like I was sitting in my hotel. I was able to call patients on Saturday morning. I was able to call a patient this morning when the swab results came back through. And I was able to give them a call and say, hey, look, your swab came back negative. So your family's not at risk. And, you know, are you still unwell? Yes. Good. I want you to stay at home for the next 14 days. I was able to do that. I wasn't putting myself at risk. I wasn't putting them at risk. I wasn't making them get on public transport to come in and see me. I think this is a really good thing. Not everything can be done over the telephone. Not everything can be done via Skype. But as much as I can, I am aiming to do.
And do you think that that's a likelihood that the government might look at how well this has worked during this time?
This is going to be a very expensive time for the government. And when it all comes to an end, God knows when, and it's not weeks, it'll be months. When it finishes, then the government will want to be trimming back again because there'll be a lot of expenses that's going on.
So are we sort of waiting for a vaccine? Like, is that...
Yeah, we're waiting.
Sort of, do we generally know sort of how long?
No idea. What was interesting is within America that the US government was making a desire to get the patent off at a German company and then only treat Americans. It's like, what? Girl.
No, that's not how this works.
This is not going to go down well, people. No, I did see a nice article that it looks like they've found something interesting in Israel.
Okay.
So that's kind of interesting as well. But a vaccine for general public availability isn't going to be something that we'll see for about 18 months.
Okay.
You know that people get well with supportive treatment and isolation and just getting well, but there are people who don't.
So you're very, I assume that means you're very supportive of this isolation thing and shutting down massive gatherings to sort of lower this curve.
Well, why do we have to have these last bashes? Stop it. Like, everybody's going, oh, we waited till Monday because of Hillsong. And that's probably true. But did we all have to go out and have an orgy? Did we all have to go out and have one last bash before we get it? No, we should all, like, we kind of have to adult this one out, yeah. and we do have to be somewhat responsible. I'm sorry if I'm sounding like the most grumpy.
No, it's do you know what? It's something that I'm hearing everyone saying. Everyone that has read properly and learned yeah. what this actually is, I think, would agree with you.
Yeah.
So with you know potentially 18 months, and you know who knows, it could be even longer before a vaccine's readily available. Mm. There's been a lot of conversation about lowering the curve. It's trending on Twitter and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Can you just sort of explain what that means and why it's important to do that while we wait for a vaccination?
So the term is flattening the curve.
Sorry, flattening the curve.
And we understand that people are going to get infected, right? Mm. But we don't want them all getting infected at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So what we can do by social isolation, and that is really, really simple, lots and lots of hand washing. The minute your hand is moving towards your face, it should be washed or given an alcohol thing. And please, please, please don't use pure isopropyl alcohol on your hands. They'll get dry and they'll crack and then you'll be really sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what flattening the curve is really about is by isolating yourself, what we can do is we can reduce the amount of people who are being exposed to the virus. And as that number goes down, it means that there isn't a vector for it to pass through.
Mm-hmm.
And so the less infections there are, it means that we have more time to be able to do this.
Yeah.
We have more time. We don't need to panic shop, right? Mm-hmm. We just need to be able to get through the next month. And the way that we do that is by not hugging, not kissing, not touching hands, not shaking hands, and staying home as much as possible. Mm. Really, we need to be using the mantra, do I need to leave the house today?
Mm-hmm.
And if it means that you are going to go bonkers, then go for a walk. Go and walk with children in nature.
Yeah.
Go Tammy Brown and walk with children at a distance.
Yeah. Oh, because children are less likely. Yeah. Children have been doing all right, haven't they?
No, children are equally as likely to get infected. It's just that they don't get sick. Here's what children do,
though. What did that?
Children kiss people. Children give hugs. Children are cute and you want to touch them and they want to hold you.
I don't like they touching children. They
are little wonderful carriers of viruses. Yeah. And children go to old people and give them kisses.
Yeah.
Children go to sick people and give them kisses because they don't understand the concept of that.
They're
and
evil, boom, right?
Those are the people who are going to get infected.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know. It's... What time is it? It's 7:13. I have no idea whether they've closed the schools in the past little while. But and from a public health perspective, it doesn't necessarily make sense to close the schools. But if your mother has cancer, then I would seriously say, does little Johnny need to go to school? Or could they do some online learning or something like that?
Do you think we should be waiting for... you know, the government to tell us to self-isolate or to shut down these sort of things? Or should we be taking proactive...
We don't need the government to tell us to be responsible. Mm. We can do it ourselves.
So, yeah.
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 This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which... is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The other part of the from what I understand, the flattening of the curve is about the load on the hospitals as well, isn't it? So it means that we can treat, whilst the same amount of people might end up becoming quite ill, if it's spread out over a longer period of time, it means that we can help them because we won't be overwhelmed.
A really good thing that I saw today was, you know how there's the toilet paper issue?
Mm. Yeah. Oh,
imagine if it was ventilators in an ICU. God.
I have six of those.
Or a bed in a hospital.
Yeah.
We currently are going... We're on the tipping point of having a toilet paper crisis of beds in hospitals.
Yeah.
And if we don't slow this down... that's going to be the problem, is we're going to be Italy, where mm-hmm. we're having to decide whether or not we let a person live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not sure about immunity. Mm-hmm. We are seeing people who have been tested positive, then tested negative, and then tested positive again. So we can't really guarantee immunity or herd immunity. Hello, UK. But I think the point of the matter is that the social isolation really means that there's less and less and less virus in the pool. If we look at U equals U, like currently in Melbourne, we've already made our 90-90-90 targets, which mm-hmm. means that there really isn't much HIV virus around to allow infections to happen.
Mm.
And it's going to be the same. We need to consider isolation as U equals U mm-hmm. and being undetectable, and staying at home is your treatment. Your yeah. treatment is staying at home, and that's your prep. Your prep for COVID is to stay at home, to socially isolate, to wash your hands.
Mm.
So to use a Luke term, I've gone all Nancy Drew. And last Friday, I thought it was very interesting. So the state leaders were meeting with the Prime Minister for this big meeting. Now, Daniel Andrews had already hinted at the fact that he thought that we should be shutting down public events. And that was something that they were going to be discussing on the day. So then 10 minutes before this meeting started, he did a press conference saying that he'd cancelled all audiences. Sorry, audiences. That's such a theatre term. Spectators at the Formula One, which I think I feel really forced everyone else in that meeting to acknowledge that they have to cancel stuff, and then they made the announcement of anything 500 and less. But it does feel like a lot of some states and definitely the federal government have been dragging their heels in cancelling major events.
Mm.
And a lot of the experts are saying that this limit of 500 people is not enough. Some are saying we should be shutting bars and restaurants like California and New York have just done. A lot of other countries have done it. Why is the government dragging their heels, and do you think they should be doing more, or are they sort of towing the line pretty well?
I think it's a careful balancing game. We don't want people panicking. We've already seen people panicking. I went shopping today and I saw people who were panicked and grabbing anything. Mm-hmm. I grabbed the most palatable stuff that I could find in there, and I felt kind of bad that I took an extra can of beans. But I have medical needs and I need to eat food, and I will get isolated for 14 days, and I live at home by myself. Mm. So, and I cannot guarantee that Uber Eats will be delivering when I get isolated.
Well, yeah,
that's terrible news. That's
a genuine concern for me, because at least 80% of my nutrition comes from Uber Eats.
Yeah.
So if we close restaurants, that's another thing.
It's a really interesting point. I have a friend that works quite high up in Uber, and I've been quite impressed actually with the messaging and stuff that they've introduced of having stuff that's being able to be dropped off at your door and that sort of thing.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, a lot of the local restaurants get their stuff from supermarkets, and a lot of them are already having to take a lot of stuff off their menu. And there are people that are already, elderly people and that sort of stuff that are more susceptible, that are relying on those delivery services. So it sounds funny, but it's serious.
We've had a peak, and I hope that this flattens out. Like, sucked in to all of those assholes who bought excessive amounts of toilet paper who can't return it. That is kind of a nice Schadenfreude. However, it's not really fair, because other people need that toilet paper. And we saw that with people who are hoarding masks, people who are hoarding hand sanitizer.
Hand sanitizer is
a problem. And that's really, really unfair, because those are a very valuable resource.
Yeah. Mm. Like, we sell a lot of sanitary products at my work, only in recent times, but like we were trying to find somewhere to buy it from, and literally like one of the girls checked on eBay and they were selling our exact same product that we sell for $30 for $1,000 each, which I was just like, this is ridiculous. Like,
there's gouging happening throughout, like
everywhere.
I saw in my feed today that, like, literally as I was waiting to speak, is that they were selling toilet paper for like $3 a roll in places in Northcote. And, there's gouging going on. And I do hope the government steps in and says, look, this is not acceptable. Mm. This is not good behavior.
This is such a side note, but do you know what my brother does for a living?
What?
He's
in the army.
No, definitely not. He makes hand sanitizer. He works for that factory out in, I think it's Seaford. And I had dinner with the family the other day and was sort of laughing that I work in a theatre that's cancelled all of our shows. So I'll be working very hard for the next month cancelling everyone's tickets. My dad manages a pharmaceutical plant, so he's gone into overdrive working 24 hours. Mum's a nurse, so she's working every fucking hour of the day. And my brother makes hand sanitizer, so he's also working. They've literally gone into 24-hour production. They're all doing 7 days a week.
Now, there's a couple of recipes going around for DIY hand sanitizer, yeah. And you know, snaps to these people for being that. But it's a little bit. If you can get the real thing, please get the real thing, yeah. Because we need that 60% to 70% isopropyl alcohol.
Some of it's behind the counter too. I learned there's a little RGA where I buy my cigarettes, and there's none on the shelf. But I went and asked.
Yeah,
like if you've got a mum and pop store sort of near you, and you go and ask, do you have hand sanitizer? They're limiting it like one. They had like two per person.
They've got it hidden,
so they had it hidden.
Yeah.
But also when I went to buy toilet paper, because JB's staying with me and he shits like four times a day, and there were people there. There was these two ladies, in fact, and they were like, what else could, like, they were trying to figure out what they could MacGyver to wipe their butts with, and they were honestly being like,
do you know what,
I could
though?
Buy this like cat when, paper thing.
When in doubt, look to the gays. Right? I've just started,
not this gay,
I proudly say on international radio, I've just started exploring bottoming, and daily Metamucil makes for the cleanest wipe.
My friend, no, you said it right the first time.
My God.
When I started taking Metamucil, a friend of mine said, oh, you're moving into a paperless office, because you literally just, you wipe, there's
just
nothing on
it. It comes out, it just flops out. It's a little wipe, and oh my God. So, yeah.
I love that. I'm going to go suck up with some Metamucil.
There is no harm in having a good fibre.
Okay, so we'd love to get into some quick fire sort of basic questions. So first off, I'm going to fire off with, should couples that don't live together quarantine together or separately?
If they do not live together, they should quarantine separately.
Okay.
What if they were to just spend the whole quarantine together
then,
instead of going back to their house?
If they're both sick, then the quarantine time starts at whoever was last diagnosed.
Okay.
But if one is well and the other one is sick and they're in the same house, they should try and separate as much as possible.
Okay.
Communal areas should be cleaned on a very regular basis.
Okay. And face masks. Do Australians need them? Yay or nay?
Some Australians need them.
Okay.
Doctors need them. Nurses need them. Healthcare workers need them.
Yeah.
People who are a little bit worried, who have no symptoms, will do not need them.
Would you say people in like the beauty and hair industry should be using them as well, or retail workers?
No. They should be social distancing.
Okay.
They should be training people. Like the ice cream store that I went to last night, they were very good. Everybody stood back.
Yep.
And when you went to tap, they had the machine there ready to be tapped well within your reach and out of theirs.
Yep. But a hairdresser?
That's a bloody hard gig. I'm sorry, but
we're
that's
literally
not
turning
an easy
around
gig.
Saying, if you have any symptoms of sickness, if you've been overseas, do not come in whatsoever.
Do you know what you should be doing? I would be temperature checking everybody. And I know that we just had that conversation, but one thing that's worked really, really well in Taiwan, in Singapore, in Taipei, is temperature.
Okay.
Everywhere you go, you get your temperature checked.
Anally?
Sorry, our rectal thermometry is so last week.
Is there a time... Sorry, I just want to clarify.
How much time do you think they've got?
Is there a specific face mask that people should be getting? You know, when the bushfires, they were like, you need a
bushfires is one of the reasons that we don't have face masks, because all of the N95s got taken up.
And everyone was like, you need to get that type. And I wore a face mask because I had a huge pattern, and they said that's useless.
No. So, if you have symptoms, you should put a paper face mask on, and that's merely designed to stop you from spreading droplets around. If you are considering putting on a paper face mask because you have symptoms, then you should be at home. You should not be going out and about just wearing a face mask. Do you need a P2 or an N95? No. That is really needs to be squirreled away for people who are doing the swabs, for people who are doing the medical procedures, because they're the ones that will be protected the most. But if you have had recent travel or had contact with a person with COVID-19 and you have a fever or respiratory symptoms, such as a sore throat, a cough, and it's usually a dry cough, or a little bit of myalgia or headache or anything like that. But the key points here is fever and cough are the main symptoms that we are seeing. So if you've got a logical history, i.e. you've recently traveled within 14 days, or you've been in contact with somebody who is a recognized case, and you have those symptoms and a fever, then go to a fever clinic and get tested.
Should orgies be avoided?
Yes.
Great.
Should we be stockpiling our medication?
You should have a month's worth of medication on board.
Already?
You should have a month's worth of stock. That is the current recommendations. And if you can get 2 weeks' worth of food in your house, if you were to be forced into isolation.
And when you talk about medications, are you talking about prescription medications? Or should people also have Panadol and ibuprofen for a month's worth, for example?
It probably wouldn't hurt to have a couple of packets of Panadol.
Okay.
Interesting data is coming out that ibuprofen may lead to a worse outcome, so you might be better off with paracetamol rather than ibuprofen.
Okay. Which is like Nurofen-y? Is that?
Yeah.
Nurofen may or may not be as good as we thought it was. So paracetamol, we know, doesn't seem to cause a blip.
Okay.
Should we still go to the GP if we have other issues, or should we just try to avoid...
Look, we are a very fidgety race at this point. Mm-hmm. So expect to answer questions. Expect to jump through some hoops if you're going to see your GP. But we are open for business and we're keen to see people as much as we can. But phone ahead. Phone ahead because, again, with the flattening of the curve, we need to be flattening out the resource curve as well. And GPs, if we start getting knocked off, we're going to... be a limited supply, just as masks are, just as everything else is.
Well, thank you so much for coming in this evening.
Thank you, Dr. George. It's a bit more of a lighthearted conversation.
I'm sorry if I sound so dreary.
No, not at all. I think it's really good to hear it from the horse's mouth. No offense.
If I get isolated, I'm going to be doing a shitload of knitting and watching YouTube. What are you going to be? What are you guys going to be doing?
I'm going to get into playing my Switch because I've avoided that for the last month. So
yeah. Well, our fellow podcast host Kyle is just about to come back from South Africa, so he's definitely going into self isolation. Just had months and months worth of gigs in my busiest time cancelled, so I've decided that I'm going to spend that time writing a web series that I've meant to write for the last 3 years.
Oh, fab. Are you going to start an OnlyFans, or is that you?
Yeah.
Look, if wanted to pay money to look at my body, I would totally start an OnlyFans.
Is it safe to be masturbating with Dettol?
No, that'd hurt.
Yeah, very okay.
But if it's your kink, is it safe?
No, don't waste the Dettol. No.
That's what I've been doing.
Why? Wow.
That's in my hands. DT's Hotel is a local queer pub. Today we're joined by their manager, Anthony Spina. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
It's a different
Anthony. Also context. One of my bosses, technically, because I do host trivia at DT's.
I think we've all seen you in a
I'm excited to find out during this interview if I still have a job.
Firstly, for those who haven't experienced a night at DT's Hotel, can you tell our audience about the history of the iconic queer pub?
Well, first, thanks for inviting me onto the podcast. I have to admit, I am a fan, so thank you.
It is really sweet when I go into do trivia. It's like, I loved the episode last weekend.
They're usually pretty good. A bit of history about the pub. DT's Hotel is celebrating 25 years this May. The pub began in 1995, an idea by Dale and Schulz. The D and the T in DTs.
Yeah, right.
That's where it comes from. Everyone asks, why is it called DT?
I thought it was double trouble.
It can be whatever you want it to be.
Someone once told me, no, it's for dicks and tits.
I used to work at the Greyhound and people used to call it either Glory Hole or Gay Headquarters.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
The community events is one thing that I love a lot about DTs. Obviously, I work there on Thursday nights, but I go to a lot of the fundraisers you've had. I mean, Bruce McKenzie, who we've talked about a lot on the podcast, was the wonderful bartender and was for a while the manager there, passed away sadly last year, but organized a lot of those events over the years. The Seahorse Club, which is for trans people who come to identify as trans later in life, was something he ran out of the cost of his own pocket, you know, putting on food and snacks and things in the back room so that they could, you know, come and meet and have a safe space to meet. Things like the Midsummer Bake Off, which is a huge fixture on the team, thing. You guys do fundraisers for, you know, when a member of the community passes away, there's fundraisers for funerals and all sorts of things. So this must be a bit of a worrying, as a staple of the community, this must be a really worrying time for you. What conversations with you and your staff, including many of Melbourne's iconic drag queens, what kind of conversations have you been having in the last few days?
Well, yes, thanks for the nice praise. DT's has, as a whole, has raised thousands of dollars over the years for various organisations, including Pride March.
Hundreds of thousands, yes,
including Pride March, which
of course.
Bake Off, that's where the proceeds go, and Bruce McKenzie did start that out of his own pocket. As we're constantly in the planning of upcoming events as the year moves along, the current situation is concerning. I'm about to have a meeting with Vic Bears to plan an event in June. And as it's changing hourly, like, we're not sure where that meeting's going to go and
yeah.
if that event will go ahead. But of course, we're always planning to hopefully do it.
Yeah, that's another big one that you guys look after is the queer sporting sector, which a lot is often looked past. We've talked about, we've admitted ourselves, we've not talked about
sports players.
We've not talked about queer sports a lot. Enough on this podcast, but you guys do a lot of stuff with a lot of the queer sporting
teams. A lot, and I've learned a lot in the last 2 years of being at DTs. I mean, I didn't know that there were so many sporting gay sporting groups, teams yeah. yeah, so I've learned a lot as well. The conversations with staff have been around making sure everyone is well informed. Our drag entertainers are currently finding it really difficult as well because they're trying to uplift everyone. And we saw during the height of the AIDS epidemic, drag queens were there to help people.
They were out of the bars into the streets.
And to support during such a dire time. So once again, we're seeing drag queens doing the same thing, trying to make light of the situation. But of course, making sure that people are still informed and looking after themselves as a whole. So drag queens, they're really important, and that's why they're finding that really tough at the moment.
Yeah.
They've been doing so many toilet paper numbers.
I mean, look, I'm going to cut down to the bare facts of this specific virus. It does affect older people. We've had Miss Candy on the show here. A lot of the drag performers at your venue are from an older generation.
They are.
Are you sort of, you know, giving them sort of tips and making sure that they're sort of self-distancing from punters and that sort of thing?
We are. And just today we had a meeting about that, actually, because obviously some of our drag queens are older. Miss Candy turned 66 on Saturday.
Yeah, which you had that wonderful party
for.
Had
a wonderful party and beautiful cake. so today we've decided that one microphone per drag queen. That's what they'll have, so they won't have to share microphones. We're also distancing the drag queens from having photos with people. So
recently
we've had a media wall where the drag queens can have photos with the punters. We're taking that back now.
Just as
a precaution.
Until further. Which is a sensible thing to do.
It's interesting because we've just had Dr. George on our show, who is a big advocate for social distancing at the moment, and I've seen the crowds thin at the last few gay nights that I've been to. It's hard to find that balance of supporting our friends in the community that work in the industry, the queens that depend on it for their livelihood.
Definitely.
Have you seen these measures having an impact on the people you work with, the venue, being at arm's length and whatnot?
Well, our staff are taking precautions, obviously. So our staff treat our punters like family. So it's not unusual for our staff to know them quite well and hug them when they see them. We have asked the staff to stop hugging the patrons now. That's a precaution that we've taken on our staff. From the punters' point of view, it's such a family vibe at DT's, so it's really hard for them not to hug each other. We are putting warnings up in the venue as well. But unfortunately, we will see some of these punters still embrace each other. And that's just a fact of DT's at this stage. And we are encouraging to follow guidelines that are out there. And some people over the weekend have stepped back from each other a little bit. They are monitoring themselves a bit better in that respect. But some people just really still like to embrace each other.
Do you think it's possible? Like, do you think it's possible to maintain a social life outside of home whilst following? Like, because I've been read for filth a lot online for going out. I've been told I'm irresponsible, and that I'm.
I think that's the wrong message at the moment.
At this stage, it could get worse, and that might be the case. But I think
From the advice that I've been reading from the government, it's not about disrupting your day-to-day life so much yet, just making sure you're having those precautions in place, having your sanitizer, making sure you're washing your hands, maybe limiting your contact with people as such, but not disrupting going out.
We've been talking about my trivia night at DT's, where normally we have, you know, everyone quite tightly packed in on the cabaret tables in the front room, about spreading those tables out, opening up the back room and using the TV so that people can still see what's happening on stage, but making sure that everyone's sort of, each table at least, is a good distance from another table and that sort of thing. Now, in the last few days, we've really seen the spread of the virus accelerate in the US. And we've seen a number of queer nightlife venues in California being ordered to shut down non-essential gatherings for over 100 people. We also just saw today New York has just announced that they're doing the same thing, which is, you know, that is New York. It is bars and cafes and that sort of thing. Only gatherings of 500 people have been banned in Australia so far. So are you guys preparing for a temporary shutdown? Like, have you sort of put some stuff in place for if it does get that far?
Well, hopefully we don't get to that stage here in Australia, of course. The talks that we have had in planning for this pandemic are involving hour-to-hour advice from the government. So it's always evolving at the moment, which is really hard to keep up with, of course, but we are. So if we had to close, we would look at doing some maintenance and hopefully it wouldn't go on for so long. Yeah. Obviously, renovating and maintenance does cost, so, and we're not getting an influx of cash anymore.
Yeah.
The hardest part about this is we just don't know where we're headed as a country, I guess, let alone just a small business.
Are you in liaison with sort of other venues around you or other queer venues about what they're doing?
We have been closely monitoring the response of other venues, especially in Melbourne and around the country.
Mm.
We have a really close relationship with Wet on Wellington and the Peel Hotel.
Yeah.
So we've been talking to them and keeping informed of what they're doing, their current policies, so we can have an approach that we're all taking together. So it's one goal.
A unified front.
So people are seeing similar policies at each venue as well. And it's not getting too confusing for people.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
What about Strike Bowling Bar? Is that a They'd be stung because you rent the shoes.
Yeah.
And you go bowling.
Fingers in the
a lot of holes.
Put some fingers in some holes at DT's as well, but different kind of thing, yeah.
One's thinking about the bowling bar.
I know Wet on Wellington has taken the precaution of measuring people's temperatures.
Yeah,
we were just talking
about that with Dr. George. Yeah.
Obviously, we're not at that stage yet as a pub venue.
Mm,
Hopefully, no one's getting that close to people that they are at Wet on Wellington at DT's. Yeah.
Oh, I've seen some things. This one, mainly. A lot of the personal experiences that I'm reading online have been from my drag queen friends or, you know, comedians. I think something people don't reflect on much as well is the people sort of front of house and the administrative stuff that are affected by things like venue shutdowns.
Mm.
Are you able to give us a bit of insight as for someone who's more behind the scenes of a queer venue that provides us with, you know, our weekly escape and our entertainment, how something like a venue shutting down would affect you personally?
It's a good question. I am fortunate to have full-time employment at the moment, of course. So, however, it does play on your mind. So, for me personally, I have savings. So, it actually probably wouldn't affect me too much. But I am very conscious of the other people in our community who do work in the arts. And we've seen the closure of the Melbourne Comedy Festival, the Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're living in a different environment where they don't have the security of full-time work. And they're probably feeling it a lot more than I am already. So, yeah, for me personally, I'm very privileged, I guess, and lucky in that sense that it probably won't affect me too much.
Mm.
But a closure of work is never good. And
yeah.
the longer it's closed, the more uncertain your job is going to be there when you get when it comes back. Yeah. So
there's also like bar staff that are casual employees.
Yeah. Bar staff, casual.
When I was out the other night, I was talking to the bouncers because they were trying to eject me from the venue, but they were saying, hey, I was meant to do a shift here last night, but not enough people rocked up. Yeah. So I just lost my shift.
Well, totally. And as a small business, it's not viable for us to be able to afford to pay people when you've got rents that are in the tens of thousands, and that's just rent, unfortunately. And that's where the government, I think, needs to step in a bit more in that
sense. I agree.
In saying that, do you think that we're sort of at risk in losing smaller queer businesses throughout Melbourne?
We already know we've lost a lot of small queer businesses over the last 5, 10, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Our pubs and our clubs and our queer spaces are finding it harder and harder to keep patron levels up. As we all champion for equality, which is an amazing thing, queer spaces are less and less somewhere they need to be, which is just a fact of running a queer business, unfortunately. Our younger queer audiences need to learn more about our queer history, and the best way to do that is through coming to our queer venues, talking to some of the older queer members of our community, and learning why RuPaul's Drag Race is so big on national television, whereas 10 years ago, maybe, well, it wasn't 10 years ago, but say 20 years ago, that's just something that would never have happened, especially under the Bush administration.
You have some regulars that are really part of the family, and a lot of them don't really have either a logical or a biological family outside of the venue.
Mm.
Do you sort of worry about what they would do if there was a lockdown? I mean, you know, I'm thinking about people like Jill and some of our other wonderful regulars.
Yeah.
Do you worry about that?
I worry about a lack of contact. Lucky for us, we live in a time of social media, so people can still reach out.
Mm.
And I think that's really important. If you're not seeing someone out, maybe think, hang on a second, I'll send them a message, give them a phone call.
Yeah.
It's we do have those avenues, and sometimes that's all people need is to know that they're being thought of,
Because a lot of, you know, people over 60, and especially those with chronic medical conditions and those with weakened immune systems, are at particular risk if they contract the virus. Do you feel like that is a large portion of the, obviously some of our family members have it, but also just the general DT's demographic, do you think that sort of covers that?
Well, in the last 2 years, we've seen a change in patronage as well. Of course, we have our core elder group as well. We are seeing a lot more of the younger ones come through, especially on our trivia nights. Mm-hmm.
Which is a very good trivia night, I might mention. Yeah. A wonderful trivia night.
It's lovely.
I hear the host is all right.
Yeah.
I don't stay very long.
His shift finishes halfway through my show, don't
Shade up in here.
And karaoke, which I co-host along with the owner. Yeah. So we're getting quite a lot of younger people come through. But we do have once a month an event called Broadside, which is
amazing.
It is amazing. And it's hosted by Doug Lucas. And for those who don't know who Doug Lucas is, he's a drag queen, an older drag queen. He's turning 70 this month. Amazing. Still performing amazingly in a chair, though.
Yeah.
But he's amazing. And he's been around since the 70s. He did pokies in St. Kilda.
Yeah.
And I encourage our younger people to come and see a Broadside show and learn some of our history, because Doug does talk about that and reminds people of the hardships that they've been through and how far we've come as well.
And also just seeing a queen that has been working on the microphone for 50 years host a show, no matter how physically, they might have to sit in a chair, but they are sharp on that microphone. Anything, it is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, she is very good.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before, the situations are changing a lot, and we'll keep you updated about events such as Broadside, because as I was saying, it is an elder crowd.
Yeah.
As it goes, we'll know if these events are going to continue for now. But at the moment, they're still happening.
Mm. So what sort of precautions has your venue taken?
We've installed hand sanitizer units behind the bar, so that way the staff have more access to hand sanitizer, and that way the patrons can see them using it. It's mainly so the patrons can see that they're being used as well.
Yeah.
We've also installed a hand sanitizer for the patrons. We're increasing our stock supply of bottled beer so that's an option for people.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, why are you doing the bottled beer?
Just so people that don't want to touch glasses or have a bit
Okay.
Yeah. In saying that, all our glasses are sanitized.
Yeah.
Of course. For the last year and a half, we have gone strawless.
Yeah.
We are bringing straws back for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
Just so that's another option for people as well. Our surface sprays contain disinfectant, which they always have. Yeah. We mop the floor intensely twice a day.
Yeah.
And we also have glass for the staff, which is another thing that's just come out today with the meeting I had with the owner, is we're going to encourage PayPass.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Especially mobile PayPass.
Yeah.
So that, no cash, no cards, touching anyone.
Yeah, very good idea.
Okay.
And we're taking away our FOS minimum so that more people can use their
That's a good idea as well. Yeah. And so that's great, the steps you guys are taking. What do you hope to see from the punters at the venue?
What we like to see from the punters at the venue is just common sense, really. Mm. Adhering to the advice from the government, making sure that if they're feeling sick, please do stay at home. Don't attend the venue if you are feeling sick, at least. And make sure you're washing your hands. Don't put gum under the seats. Shouldn't be doing that anyway.
Yeah.
And respect each other's personal space.
Yeah, of course.
It's just common sense stuff, really.
I'd hate to see punch-ons about this 1 meter thing. You know, people being like, you need to step back.
Back it up. Yeah.
You know, like... Common sense is a hard thing for people
I'm
to
actually,
get sometimes.
Like, as we talk, I'm going through my brain, because, last Thursday when we did trivia, it was packed, and this conversation wasn't as big as a thing.
No.
This Thursday when we do trivia, there's a lot of things in the night, like when I get everyone up to show their colouring in pictures, I have 20 people standing on the stage at the same time.
Yeah.
We're going to have to really think about little things like that to sort of make sure people have the space that they need to.
Well, speaking of that, Thomas does a thing called Joke of the Week.
Of course, yeah.
The
microphone.
We're not going to let them do Joke of the Week over the microphone. They'll just have to yell it out.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Fair. Yeah. Good idea.
So that's small. It's really small things, and they all add
but
up.
It is practical and good things that you're thinking. I hadn't even thought about it. So the fact that you guys have already thought about that is fantastic.
Yeah. I know this podcast is going out tomorrow, maybe.
Yes.
We are looking at stopping karaoke.
Okay. Oh, of course.
For now. Yeah. That's not
because of the
public knowledge yet. Yeah. But,
for everybody?
For everyone in the state. No karaoke.
That's big. You'll just leak that on the show.
Shame. We'll think of something camped on a Wednesday night instead of karaoke.
We're thinking of just doing requests.
So what about a lip sync night?
Lip sync.
So people can get up and do a lip sync to whatever number they want.
That could be fun.
Yeah.
Like what they do at Thursday. Like lip sync for your beer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We'll have to call it a different name.
Yeah.
Bring your own microphone.
And plug it in.
You keep talking about patrons. We got a little Patreon to support us. Is there any way our community can support queer venues and the bar if they can't attend? We can work from home at the practice. We can go online, but y'all can't do that, really. No. You know, you've got an OnlyFans or something for DT. Yeah.
I was candy, you know, just doing dirty stuff.
I was joking with my housemates about being on the phone trying to tell someone how to pour a beer. And then trying to convince them to put money in the till while they did it. But no, in all seriousness, things like that, we're just trying to get people that are uncomfortable with crowds maybe to come in on our quieter times, mm-hmm. so earlier. That way they're still supporting us and they're still spending the money to keep us
Your
going.
Your new Monday nights are quite a chill night.
Yeah, and Mondays have just opened up again, and it's cheap drinks all night, and it's a relaxed vibe. So that's what we're thinking. We've also started Uber Eats. Last year, we sell alcohol on Uber Eats. Mm. So if you can't get down to the venue and you still want to support us, which we'd love, get onto Uber Eats and you can get some alcohol from us that way.
It's actually a really fantastic... And you guys are lucky because you're an older venue and you have a bottle shop license. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Which means you're able to sell alcohol... Well, you're able to
sell
off-premises alcohol.
Off-premises, and we can sell it between the hours of 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
And I think it's a really great way for people in the area to be able to support the bar, because as more and more people are deciding not to go out and possibly self-quarantining, we all still want to fucking drink while we watch Netflix.
Yeah,
you know?
I was thinking about that like today. Yeah. I think you want to drink more.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think if anyone is living in sort of the Richmond area and you do need a bit of a drink, jump on Uber Eats and look for DTs, because it's a really great way to continue supporting you guys. It's a mutual thing. They're not just giving away cash for nothing. They're going to get their drinks.
And they're quite well priced too.
Yeah, they are. And it's ensuring that you guys are still getting a bit of income.
Definitely. So
that's something you would be able to do even if the bar was shut down to the public. Correct?
If we shut down to the public, like I said earlier, we'd look at doing maintenance in that period, and we would have our bottle shop through Uber Eats running from 7 a.m. At the moment, we only run it when we're actually open.
Yeah.
Okay, so it runs from 5 to 11, but if something like that did happen, we'd run from 7 a.m. right through to 11 p.m. Amazing. So you can get your alcohol from us that way.
Yeah, which is a great idea.
This is a good opportunity for the introverted gay people to take over the venue. Everyone's social. You know, if you're saying it's going to be quieter, we get 1 meter distance from every... Like, that sounds like... That's a treat.
Did you see that image that went viral today? And it was this guy in Italy, and he's got this like big disc.
Oh my God, hanging. Yes.
It's like a 2 meter circumference disc hanging around him so that no one can come near him in public.
Yeah. Italy's going off.
I want to see Miss Candy wearing that on Saturday night.
Yes.
Hopefully Eurovision goes ahead, because I think we need some Eurovision.
And that's your favourite thing.
That's my favourite thing. And we do Eurovision every year. We screen everything. So the Wednesday, the Friday and the Sunday grand final. Mm. So hopefully that goes ahead. And if anyone can check out the Russian entry, oh my God.
Amazing.
It's so camp.
Heaven. Yeah. And if you did have to shut down for a little while, do you reckon we will have a big reopening party when this all finishes?
Well, yes, I think we would. We do, like I said, we've got the birthday celebrations coming in May, so there's already big parties planned.
Yeah.
And I think if we did have to shut down in the next few weeks, hopefully we'd be back open in before May. But yeah, it's definitely a big party to be open with.
I'll be having a big party there if I have to go into isolation. As soon as I get out, that's where I'm going. Anthony, thank you so much for coming in. I mean, it's a treat working with you every week, but it's nice to have you in this environment as well. And thanks for sharing the information with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I don't know what fucking day of the week it is. Life is crazy
at the moment, and there are no certainties. Yeah. But one thing that is certain, we will try to continue to make this podcast happen every week. We've already started talking about if we have to go to lockdown or one of us gets sick, we will try our darndest to phone it in or do something.
Kyle phones it in every week.
Kyle hasn't been here for 2 weeks, and you haven't even noticed, you can't. Oh, sorry, I didn't say that word.
Well, thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you so much for listening. Lots of information in there, but I think important stuff, and that's why we wanted to get it out early.
That's it. No.
Everyone stay safe, wash your hands, stay a meter away from people.
And for everyone who is a patron and who pays for our subscription,
we're going to be giving away the cure to COVID-19 in the Patreon episode. So pay your $6 and we will tell you how to get better.
It's a maple syrup.
No, but we're talking about queer wellness and how we all take care of each other.
Yeah, taking a bit of time off to look after yourself.
Yeah. Yes, that's it.
It's probably self-care. Very pertinent at the moment.
Yes, that's it. We all need a bit of that. But until next week,
bye!
Bye! Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.